Hello, Daniele.
Hello, hello. How are you?
I'm very good. And you?
Good, good. Pretty good. Pretty happy to be here.
We start with the very, very easiest question of them all. What's your name and what are you doing?
Well, I am Daniel Rudas. I am an anthropologist of education. I am working at Instituto Caro y Cuervo. That's a small university in Colombia, a public university. I am an anthropologist from Columbia University, in the city of New York. So Columbia. So that, yeah, basically I am studying along with communities about literacy practices. That's my job.
So what does that mean exactly? What is your research focused on?
Well, as many anthropologists, what I do is demonstrate with evidence that particularly people from marginalized communities, are very intelligent, and they solve in a very creative ways their problems. So my research is focused on problems regarding literacy and the written language. So these people that stereotypically are tagged as illiterate or with low levels of literacy, I work with them to demonstrate that they are very creative in solving problems they face when they have to use the written language. And these problems turns out to be part of their social movements, for instance, defending their territories, their cultures in Colombia and in Mexico. So, that's basically it.
Do you have a local focus? Are you specifically observing or studying specific communities?
Yes. So I work in a mountain, a very high mountain in Colombia. It's called Suma Pass. It's a rural area, very cold and humid, and a low populated area. And I'm working with the population that inhabits the Suma Pass area. Historically, is part of the origins of peasant social movements in Colombia and in Latin America. So I work with elderly people there in Suma Pass.
What is so special about this community? Why you're interested in these people specifically?
Well, when they started their social movement, early 20th century, they taught themselves how to read and write. So they were in confrontation with the state, so no official schools whatsoever were built in the area. And children, they knew something about literacy, like third grade or second grade literacy levels. And they organized ways in which children, they were the teachers for all the people in the movement. So I interviewed people involved in this kind of unusual schooling, like a locally made way of creative schooling. And that resulted in a very strong social movement, because they were able to participate in illegal confrontations, right? They were able to sue the state and to demand the rights using the written word.
So this followed basically this process of education.
Exactly, like self-education in a way, because it was like a community level education.
How has the situation changed for the people in Suma Pass since then, or how have they changed their situation?
Well, nowadays, they were very successful in their struggles, and they get right to own the land and to get like formal education. There is even a university right now there in Suma Pass. Roads are built, electricity and the internet arrived like 10 years ago. So social transformation is huge right now. There are people from Suma Pass, there are young people, they are not even aware about what happened, you know, with the social movement and all these literacy stories I have been collecting with the people, the elderly people. So it's huge, the change, and we are very into like documenting and sharing again in the community all these history about Suma Pass.
So what can other places benefit from the publications that you make about this region and about the resilience of this people?
Well, I think that it's something with a worldwide impact, because what I am proposing is a method, an ethnographic method, an anthropological and educative method, which allows everybody to recognize, document, and use this kind of non-official, or you can say like grassroots literacies. So my hope, what I would like to happen with my research, is that, for instance, you, Francisca, like, oh, wow, I can research about what my grandma wrote, what, you know, the diaries of people I met there in Luxembourg, and create value from all these grassroots literacies.
How would that work? So I don't get the connection between the education projects in Sumapaz and the history of people in Luxembourg or other places.
Well, the connection is basically about, as I commented at the beginning, being able to get value of the knowledge built by people which is not necessarily they are not in academia, right? In official educational institutions, like, for instance, domestic workers, or peasants, or indigenous people that stereotypically are tagged as having like a cultural level of education, or like a very basic and locally based, very non-scientific knowledge. So with the recognition and with the method I am proposing for researching about these literacy practices they have, everybody can be able to identify and the intelligence, you can say some way, of their knowledge, right? There are communities that are not very related with, they are not connected to the written word. I am working with communities that have been working with the written word. They are most of them in the world. So I think that identifying these grassroots literacy practices is a good way. It's a good way to recognize these the value of this knowledge, the intelligence of the people that practice these literacies.
In the project where we're working together, the Redis Link, we're working on language inequality. What does language inequality mean for you as an anthropologist and for you personally?
Well, in this case, with the people that we are working with in Redis Link, there are strong ideologies about what the written word is and how to use it. For instance, the language of bureaucracy, the language of law, and then these peasant social movements, indigenous social movements, they are not used to writing that way. Usually, their ways of writing are tagged as a failure, incomplete. You know, they are just in the way to literacy, you know. So what we are doing in Redis Link is identifying the ideologies regarding the written word so that we can work with bureaucrats, lawyers, and other people from the state and, you know, corporations that are able to recognize that it's not that the people they are of these communities are stupid, or they have like low level of literacy and illiterate people. No, it's just that you need a perspective to identify value and work together with these communities to build knowledge together.
So that means, in your eyes, language or literacy doesn't necessarily mean the correct grammar?
No, absolutely not. The correct grammar is something that is interesting for empires, for people that really, with the need of having like corporate control or state level control over something. But at the level of human interaction and at the more anthropological level, language is not necessarily about standardization. It's more about diversity and communication.
So that means that literacy can also be not written words, not sentences, but what else?
Oh, well, there is a huge universe about that. Verses, like drawing with letters, making like sculptures with letters, small messages in papers. I mean, when you open your mind to widen your vision about what literacy means, then you are in the multimodal area, and then like being able to use graphical inscriptions, linguistic graphical inscriptions, which is like a wider definition of what literacy is, then you can see a lot of creativity, a lot of like communities of knowledge all around the world. The way, for instance, in which people from the African diaspora, they decorate gardens, and you know, they use like decorations in their homes. They have a literacy behind them, a literacy that is not local level, but worldwide level. That's the research of one of my teachers, Professor Greg Undaker, and she proofs like that with evidence. It's fantastic. So yeah, that's what I mean.
Perfect. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Francisca, and thank you for being here.